And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
All right. I'm just gonna play us in a little bit.
When are you gonna tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
I think I got that.
Nice.
Oh, thanks, man. Hey, this is John. That was me just messing around. I'm trying to learn Book of Love for June 7th. I will be at the Rhine Cellar with Rich Dashnow. Rich Dashnow is amazing musician who can play anything.
Oh, nice.
He plays symphonies and orchestras and rock bands and jazz quartets. He's insane.
Wow.
And so I'll be there June 7th at 7 if you want to come see that. I am hosting on July 27th the James's Warriors Music Festival. That's like an all-day gig. Starts at 12, ends at 9:30. For more information on that, just go to jameseswarriors.org. And then August 24th, I'm playing the Hope Rocks Music Festival. And that's enough about me. That's way too much about me. I am with Lucia. Say your last name because I don't want to butcher it.
It's all right. It's actually Chiarelli.
I would have butchered it.
The pronunciation is Chiarelli, which is fine.
All right. And you know Sharon.
I do.
She wrote me yesterday. She's like, my friend's coming over and she's on your show tomorrow.
Yep.
She's so much fun.
She's awesome. She's one of the best people
I've ever met.
She's wonderful.
How did you meet her?
I actually saw her on Facebook because she's a fellow drummer.
Okay.
A fellow female drummer.
Right.
I don't see a lot of those. So I was just, just blown away. And I said, I got to meet this woman. So I went to one of the gigs. And, and she was so warm. She gave me a great big hug. Thank you for coming down. And just another funny part of this. Now I had been sitting there having dinner with a friend of mine. And there was this guy setting up the equipment. I didn't pay a darn bit of attention to him. So when I met Sharon, she gave me a big hug. And she says, "Ooh, I want you to meet Gary." She said, so I turned around and I said, "Hi, nice to meet you, Gary." I looked straight at him. And nothing. So I turned back around. She says, "Oh, I'm sorry. I should have introduced him as Max." She says, "He's got this show called the Traveling Max Good Time Sing-Along Show." And I looked at her. Because 30 years ago, I knew a guy named Gary, who started up an act called the Traveling Max Good Time Sing-Along Show. Yep. And I turned around and I looked at him and I said, "Gary?" And I totally forgot my name. I looked at him and I went, "Gary? It's me." And he looks at me. And then Dawn, his eyes go wide open.
Right.
And goes, "Lucy? Oh, my God." And it was like crazy.
That's
crazy reunion. Yeah.
He's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
He's like one of my favorite people.
Yeah.
I'd have him on a show every day if I could. I love him.
Oh, my God. Yeah. He's awesome.
All right.
Everybody is.
You are a drummer.
I am a drummer.
Also a guitar player, apparently.
A guitar player. I play a little keyboards. I sing. I've written some songs long time ago, which I,
And we'll sample. I'll put them in the show.
Yeah, if you want to.
Yeah.
And I'm an author of some books here. I have two novels, an advice book that is really crazy, and then three memoirs.
Oh, okay.
So the memoirs are basically...
One for each life?
no, starting from 14 to, 20-something, and then going into my 30s and 40s, and then the last one is fairly recent, within the last 10 years, I guess, and then I'm working on the final one now at home, so I have different titles here. I don't know if you want me to...
We'll do one.
We can go after,
we'll do one. Let's talk the advice book first. What's the title of the advice book?
The advice book is called Advice from a Sicilian Rebel. I'm Sicilian.
Okay.
And it's got all kinds of advice on... all sorts of stuff, food shopping, just anything I could think of, driving tips, cleaning tips, Facebook. I mean, I wrote this book back in 2013, I think, or 2014. So it's a little outdated with some of the, like, Facebook. I said I would never be on Facebook, and I'm on Facebook.
There you
now.
Go. And what was your rationale for not being on Facebook?
I just was like, I don't want that many people to know about my personal life.
Right.
And then once you're on it, it just sucks you right in.
Why don't you want people to know about your personal life? If you're writing memoirs.
Well, this, yeah, that's a very good question.
Thank you.
I don't want people to know it's me.
Oh, okay.
Don't ask me why. It makes no sense, but a lot of my friends have not read my books, and
how's
that's
that feel?
Kind of purposeful. No, oh. I kind of don't want them to,
okay.
Like only my close friends. It's not that I have anything to hide. I mean, it's all in here. But people tend to judge, and without walking a mile in somebody's shoes, as they say, it's just not good to judge.
What's one thing in one of your memoirs that you think you would be judged for?
Oh, my God. Well, the biggest thing I'm judged for is weakness. And I say weakness in quotes because the last person that I dated would ask me, you know, some specific questions, and I would tell him, you know, what happened. Oh, my God, that's horrible. And so that's horrible. I'm so sorry you went through that. And then later, it becomes, I can't believe you were so weak and you let that happen to you. And then it's like, then it gets turned against you. And that's happened before, not just with him, but other people. And I'm like, oh my God. And like all this stuff happens.
I'm not sure I could have somebody in my life who would convert a tragedy into a weakness.
Well, people that did that are not in my life anymore.
That's probably the right move.
Yes. So, you know, I broke the negative patterns, but like I said, I don't know if I said it already, but these are guidebooks of what not to do in relationships. And like single people should read this and maybe learn from this and not suffer the way I did.
Have you ever been married?
Yes.
How many times?
Three.
Three times.
Yes. Another thing I get judged on. Oh, but I only count being married once.
Okay.
To my second husband because you're going to think I'm crazy, but the first husband...
You married him so he could stay in the country?
No.
Okay.
No, not like that. I was on a rebound from somebody else. My father was dying. This guy was madly in love with me. And long story short, I ended up being a virgin until after my divorce.
Okay.
Yes. So that's a little shock factor for everybody. That's in my first book also, the memoir.
How does that work? And I get like, you talk about it, and then you say, okay, I'm saving it for the wedding.
Right.
Right?
Right. Good Catholic girl, the whole nine yards.
The wedding night comes, and everybody's had three too many, and we go to bed, and we forget to have sex.
Yeah, no, we didn't forget. It just wasn't working. I had some blocks emotionally that were blocking me physically, and it was
okay.
Like this weird thing that nothing could get in. I've gone to doctors. There was nothing that could get in.
Did he know about that ahead of time?
No. Unfortunately, I didn't know about it either.
Oh, you went. You're still saying you went to doctors afterwards.
Yeah.
And
trying to figure
it just
out
wasn't
what was
physically
wrong.
Possible.
Right.
To do.
Because I honestly wasn't in love with the guy. It was like a rebound thing, and he was nice. And my dying father said you should marry him, and like this whole. So
yeah.
I don't count that. You know. And then the second husband, everything was great, and but it just didn't work out. There were some family issues, and, you know, it didn't work out.
Second husband...
Oh, yeah, second husband, everything was great.
Everything was great.
Well, yeah, the first boyfriend after my divorce, everything was great.
Yeah. It was just this one guy.
It was this poor guy.
Does he know that?
I think he does.
Oh, can you imagine being that guy?
Well, you know what?
I'm the one person in the world she can't have sex with. That's rough.
It's funny. It's like he just got married this weekend.
Oh, congratulations.
I'm very happy to him. So happy for him. So, yeah.
That's okay. So one thing not to do, I guess, would be to not have sex until you get married.
That you can't have sex.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Right.
So second husband, everything was good, but family.
It was, yeah, family came between us and there was a lot of stuff.
How does family? I get family being a problem, but how does it become like a divorce-worthy problem?
Well, it was a little bit more than that, too. We had he's got a disabled brother.
Okay.
And he was interfering a lot. And his sister was also interfering with us and the house. There was a house that they owned. Their family was, like, inherited.
Right.
The grandmother still lived there. She had a life estate on the house. Grandmother was nuts.
Oh, okay.
Very, you know.
Right.
So that created problems. And then finally, the grandmother went to live with her relatives, with her son and, you know, family. And then we moved to, we were living in Westchester at the time. We moved up.
Where'd you live
here.
In Westchester?
Porchester.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we moved up to Pine Island, built a house. I GC'd the house.
It Wonderful.
Was a beautiful log house. And I guess the problems just followed and we just didn't make it financially. We got divorced and we continued to live together for like 3 or 4 years after.
Just
in the house, just economic reasons.
Right.
His brother was living downstairs and.
That's awkward.
Yeah. We made a nice apartment for him. So we brought him with us.
No, I mean living together.
Yeah. Well, he had his own apartment at that point.
Oh, okay.
So that made it a little easier. But still, it was, he had some obsessive compulsive issues and some other emotional issues. And it became a little difficult. He was very codependent on us for everything.
Right.
You know, we'd take him food shopping. He'd have a,
so it's having a kid without having a kid.
Right, yeah. He'd have a tantrum in the supermarket, you know, whatever. So
finally that just got to be too much.
It was rough, yeah. It got to be too much. We're still very good friends.
All right.
Very, very good friends, me and Carmine, yeah.
Now the third time.
Yeah, the third time
is not a charm.
No, it wasn't. I don't really want to talk about it too much because a lot of people know him and I don't want to say anything bad. He's a great guy. For other people, just didn't work out for me. It was more of a business deal. He really wanted a house, and I had a house. And there was no wedding night. Was like a business deal closing.
Okay.
And that was it for the rest of the marriage. It was nothing. So I finally realized he was actually in love with somebody else the entire time. And
that's unfortunate.
And he's very happily with her now. So. I'm happy for him. I wish him the best. But I just could have.
Would you get married again?
I don't know. It depends on who it is.
You are my.
It's gotta be somebody spectacular.
I have a. Have you? If you listen to the show, you've heard this. I apologize. Do you know my anti-marriage rant?
I think so.
I think as a legal entity, marriage should be abolished.
Okay.
And here's why. If you took all your money and put it in a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that bank failed over half the time.
Yeah.
And you only got half your money back.
Right.
That bank would be illegal.
I would say
If you went to a bank and over half the time they only gave you half your money back.
Yeah.
That bank would be illegal. They're stealing half your money. That's what marriage is. It's a bank that fails over half the time and you only get 50%.
That is true.
So, now, cohabitation, I'm all for that. You know, domestic partnerships,
Me too.
All for that. But the legal, and I think I'll bet you in 50 years, marriage is illegal.
Well.
Not being in love, not family, but the legal institution.
Legal aspect of it, yeah.
I bet it's illegal.
Well, I don't think it's necessary anymore, like, in general. I mean, because people have domestic partnerships.
Right.
You don't really technically need a piece of paper
right
to tell you that
you're legally bound. You do if you want to visit somebody in a hospital.
Oh, that's true. Stuff like
you
that.
You do.
Yes.
But this is another thing that makes me crazy is a tax incentive to lose half your money.
Yeah.
You the government will pay you to risk losing half your money over half the time.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
It's nuts.
That's nuts. All right. So, what are you best at in a relationship then?
What am I best at? Wow, that's a good question. I guess I'm just best at treating them the best I could. I mean, the golden rule, I believe in that. I really do. And it's not like I'm treating them the way I want to be treated. I'm just treating them the way I want to treat them.
Right.
You know, because I'm a kind person and I'll do anything. I mean, I was a stellar wife, especially, you know, the third one. And it really didn't get me anywhere except extra chores and extra you know, cooking and just being alone most of the time. It was not good.
What are you worst at in a relationship?
Worst at? That's an interesting one. What am I worst at? Trust, I guess. I'm worst at trust because I trust too hard. And then I get, you know, bitten in the butt. So.
Are you dating right now?
No. I am not.
You're a chick drummer in a band. How are you not dating right now?
Yeah, that was the argument from the last person. Because I was in a band and he was very jealous of, and he said, you know, the chick in the band, everybody's going to want to do you and all this stuff. And it was ridiculous. I ended up leaving that, had to leave that band because of that.
Really?
Yeah. And it was just, it wasn't easy. There was a lot of anger and jealousy issues. And so, you know, I called them and I said, I can't be in the band anymore. And then a week later, I broke up with him. I'm like, hey, I'm back. I'm available. I can be in the band.
But by then?
But by then they had found a drummer.
Yeah.
And, you know, but they asked me to be a backup drummer. So
okay, there you go.
We'll see what happens.
Jealousy's weird.
Oh, yeah, it's horrible.
Because what jealousy really is it's saying, I am the only person who's allowed to feel this way about you.
Right.
And I was never a jealous person for that reason. Because I'd be like, well, of course. I mean, if I like French fries, everybody probably likes French fries. Mm-hmm. So how am I going to be mad at you for liking French fries when I like French fries?
Right.
And, you know.
I mean, I could see if there's threats to the relationship.
Yeah, like, but if there's threats to the relationship.
Legit threats.
If there's threats to the relationship, it's because you're not you personally. That person is allowing there to be threats.
Right.
There is a way to handle.
Right.
There's a way to handle fan email that is graceful, but.
Well, that's exactly it. So basically, he was telling me that I didn't know how to handle threats when there, number one, wasn't any threats. Number two, if there were any threats, I would have handled them.
Right.
Because I don't play that kind of game. And so we would fight over a hypothetical situation that never happened.
That sounds like somebody that just likes to fight.
Right.
I mean, when you're making stuff up.
Right. Well, that's
to fight about.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, hypothetical stuff. And then he had people that actually did legitimately like him and were openly flirting. And he never did anything to tell them, discourage them, tell them, hey, I've got a girlfriend.
Right.
Never. Just skirted around it. To leave the door open. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was like, I shut all the doors with everybody and everything.
Right.
And he still had to have the door open, the window open. I mean, you know, the basement door open.
The basement door open.
Attic door open.
Gate on the driveway open. Whole shoot match. I get it. What's your writing process?
My writing process. I've been writing since I was a little kid. And whatever comes to mind, I just, you know, I.
Do you write every day?
I don't write every day. I would like to. But it's just sometimes ideas come to me from wherever. My first novel was written from a dream that I had.
Very cool. What's the name of the first novel?
Criminal Spirit.
Okay.
And I call it a spiritual thriller.
Okay.
And there's a surprise ending, like a surprise twist ending that is like M. Night Shyamalan worthy.
Oh, wonderful.
So I'm like, I want to.
We're
really
shopping the film rights?
I would love to, but I'd have to write it as a screenplay first.
No, somebody does the film rights from your book. You don't have to touch it.
Really?
Yeah, that's how it works.
Because I thought you had to write a screenplay
you license the rights to the book, and somebody picks it up, and they hire a screenwriter.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, no, you don't have to do any of that.
All right.
Let's get to work, lady.
I'm coming for you, M. Night Shyamalan. I am going to send you my book.
Do you handwrite or do you type?
No, I type.
You type.
I type about 100 words a minute.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
That helps. Do you outline?
Sometimes I do. Like, if there's a lot of characters. Like, for this, I had to. And I had to create a character for each, a personality for each character.
Okay.
Because in my dream, they were all there. But I had to get a personality for each of them and the storyline. But the main thing is 6 different people caught in a warehouse looking for money. And in my dream, I had the ending in my dream. So I had to create all of it.
Just to
get to the ending.
Well, that helps. If you can start with an ending,
yeah,
that really helps.
And yeah, and what was really cool about it was these people became real to me, these characters that I created.
Mm-hmm.
And when I finished writing it, I started crying. I was like, I'm going to miss them.
There's a sequel in the works?
I was planning on a sequel, but I'm not sure if there's going to be one now. Because I left it open for a sequel.
Okay. Do you, and where are you creatively? Do you, there are different people have different philosophies. Some people say, I just channel it. Mm-hmm. Some people say, no, I made it. Some people say, some combination thereof. What's your...
Right. I guess I channel it. Like, yeah. When I was writing the novel, it was almost like it took on a life of its own.
Right.
So thoughts were coming into my head, and I was just writing as fast as I could. And then the second book, the advice book, was just a bunch of thoughts that I would have every day driving to work or in the supermarket or whatever. And then I would just write them down. So I had a whole bunch of different thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to, like, see if I could solicit, like, my own column in one of the local papers or something,
right.
Where, you know, but nobody was really interested in advice from a Sicilian rebel. So,
so give me one piece of advice from a Sicilian rebel.
Don't drive slow, because slow driving drives people crazy and makes everybody angry. And if you basically are you're driving down a nice country road and you turn around, you see a line of cars following you. You're going too slow. Pull over.
What if you're doing the speed limit? Because that happens all the time. I'm doing the speed limit and everybody else wants to speed.
That too. Well, that's different. If you're doing the speed limit, then you can even do a little over. But the thing is, if you have a line of cars behind you, regardless, you're doing
right.
Something wrong. Like, the people behind me, all they see is dust.
Right.
You know, I'm gone.
Right. Where are you on unsolicited advice?
I'm okay with it. Yeah,
you are?
Take it with a grain of salt. Oh. Yeah, I get it all the time.
It makes me crazy.
Does it really?
I hate unsolicited advice. I love, and I ask, I openly ask for advice a lot.
Okay.
But I hate unsolicited advice. To me, there's very little difference between unsolicited advice and criticism. Except except you're just not brave enough to couch it as criticism.
That is
so
true.
You're giving me,
Yeah.
You want to, yeah.
Well, for me, I'm very used to criticism, and I'm very used to unsolicited advice. People give it to me all the time. Lucia, what are you doing? You shouldn't do that. Well, why shouldn't I do this? It's not going to blow up, and it's not going to whatever. Sometimes I need to spread my wings a little bit.
Right.
And I'm used to it.
Other than dating, what's something that people have told you not to do that you did?
Probably motorcycling.
Motorcycling is a good one.
I know. And I have a helmet that I just bought. So now I've got this helmet and I don't know what to do with it. Should I keep it? Because the person I was dating had a motorcycle. So that's why I got the helmet.
Right.
Never got to ride with him though, because I broke up with him before that. So now I have this helmet that I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do with it? Should I keep it? Should I return
You're going to wind up buying a bike now.
Well, I don't know if I'm going to do that, but I'm just going to leave the door open. So I thought of some creative things I could do with the helmet.
Go ahead.
Well, I could sit and watch Star Wars and pretend to be Darth Vader.
That would work. That would definitely work.
You know, Luke, I am your father.
You could do that.
But I'm just going to hold it.
All right.
See what happens. I'm going to hold it.
You work out?
I do. I'm more yoga than working out, and I do have weights that I use, like
right.
Stupid little weights, nothing significant. But I carry a lot of stuff around, my drums.
Right, right.
You know.
Well, and drums is a form of working out.
Yes.
Drums are a lot, if you're good.
Yeah.
Drums are a lot.
They're very therapeutic.
How long have you been playing?
I've only been playing for 20 years.
That's long enough.
But still not. Like, you need to be a kid. Like, you start out as a kid, and then you could do everything.
Right.
So, you know, you're limited when you start out at 40 years old, you know, and you're playing. I'm self-taught, so.
Cool. I love, what I love about drums, and I don't think people appreciate it, is the footwork involved. If you're a good drummer, you are essentially playing four different instruments at the same time.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, coordination. It's just like a motorcycle, too.
Yeah.
Your hands and
right.
Your legs doing independent things.
Right.
Your feet, everything is independent.
But trying to get your hands and your feet to be independent, that's tricky.
It is tricky.
Who's your favorite drummer?
Peter Criss from Kiss.
Okay.
Because he's totally undisciplined.
Who is your least favorite drummer?
Oh my God, I don't think I have a least favorite drummer.
Okay.
Wow.
Is it possible? I'm on this roll with this question, so forgive me. I'm doing this is like the third show in a row where I've asked this question. Who's the best drummer?
Who's the best drummer?
Is it possible to be the best drummer?
I don't think so. I think there's just different drummers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Neil Peart is outstanding, you know, but Ringo Starr is too.
Ringo Starr is crazy good.
He's crazy good. He's underestimated.
Very much so.
Yeah.
You know that Paul McCartney story about him?
No.
So Paul McCartney got sick and tired of Ringo being criticized for being Ringo.
Okay.
And Paul McCartney said, no, he's one of the most technically proficient drummers there are.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And everybody, you know, people are laughing at him. Paul McCartney hired a company, took I forget how many bands, like 30 different bands, and had this company analyze the technical, how on time the drummers were, and Ringo Starr was the most.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so, I mean, he's got those crazy little things that he does on the hi-hat, different, you know. Yeah, I can't do it. I mean,
I got nailed because somebody wrote something about being the best or something. And I always on the show as a joke say, mostly it's with guitar players because that's what I do. So I'm like, who's the best guitar player? And, you know, but it's conversation on a show. It's not how I really feel in real life. In real life, I'm more of who's your favorite guitar player. But somebody wrote best and I said no favorite. And then I got lit up for giving ribbons to everybody and blah, blah, blah. And so now I'm just asking people. And I have not met anybody since that happened who says that there can be a best act. Weird. But
yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's just everybody's different. So.
All right. So we got the first advice book, which is the Sicilian.
Advice from a Sicilian Rebel.
Do you have any advice for me about the show?
No,
I'm asking.
Don't
so this
ask
is not
difficult questions. No, I'm kidding. Don't make me cry, John.
Oh, that's coming.
Oh, no.
We're still in the first half hour. Uh-oh. I'm warming up. Okay, so we got the first advice book and we got the first novel. What's next?
Then the third novel is based on a true story.
Wait, we skipped over the second novel.
The second novel. Wait, Criminal Spirit's the first novel.
First one. What's the second one?
The second book was Advice from a Sicilian Rebel, but the second novel
is the third book. Got it. Okay, what's that?
Which is, it's called Lament Troy, and I know it's not a catchy title, but it's like Lament Roy. So
okay.
It's and this is actually me on the cover.
Is it really?
When I was 19 years old in Switzerland.
Oh wow. What were you doing in Switzerland?
I was writing to this guy
That's
on the cover.
Picture.
I met him on a bus going to Canada. And he was going to Canada to learn English into Toronto. And then he said he was gonna write to me when he got back home, and he did. And then we started writing. We wrote for a couple of years. And then I went to Switzerland to go see him. And we fell madly in love and the whole thing. And so
what happened?
Oh, horrible, horrible ending.
What happened?
Horrible ending. I don't know if I want to give too much of this away.
Oh, wait, that's it.
It's in the book, but it's the third part of the book is what happened.
Okay.
Except I gave myself a happy ending. So, okay. I'm pulling that right out
and leading with that.
No. I gave myself a better ending.
Okay.
I'd say. So what happens is she meets a guy named Roy. She meets him at work. There's three parts to this where she dies in the first part and then comes back. So she meets this guy, Roy, in the first book, in the first part. And she really doesn't care that much about him. Like, he's really after her.
Right.
And he said he was writing this epic novel. And, you know, she was just not interested in him at all.
Right.
She was interested in all these other people.
Right.
And then she ends up getting herself in a drunk driving accident, and she dies.
Oof.
There's no spoiler alert there. So then that brings us into part two. So now she's up in front of what I call the panel, and, you know, she's dead, and she says, you know, she says, I really think that I was in love with Roy towards the end after I lost...
Honey, I'm home.
Hey, don't be mad, but...
Karen, what the heck is that? A raccoon?
His name is Squeakers. Can we keep him, please?
Absolutely not, Karen. This is not a pet. Squeakers, be quiet.
You should be ashamed talking about sweet baby Squeakers that way.
Karen, have you got bats in your belfry?
Oh, about that. Need humane pest removal? Skip the rabies shots and call Waverly Pest Control. We'll show your furry friends the door so you don't have to.
Hi, this is Mike Robinson. All of us at Waverly Pest Control are also nature lovers, and we make every effort to utilize the safest and most humane removal and relocation practices whenever possible. Give me a call at 845-297-6700 or look us up on the web at waverlypc.com and wave goodbye to pests.
We do it best. Wave goodbye to pests. Oh! Waverly Pest Control. When you want to wave goodbye to pests. Waverly Pest Control.
Him because he just finally like left her because he was like enough of this,
right?
And she says, I want a chance to go back and do it again. So the panel grants her this chance to go back and do it again, and they said, we have to wipe out your memory. You're not supposed to have a memory when you go back. And she says, no, but how am I gonna know that it's Roy? I might do the same mistake again, you know. And
right,
so they said, okay, we'll let you keep your memories. So she goes back and she meets him again.
Mm.
This time they work out.
Mm.
But the epic novel, and Roy's still writing that epic novel, she reads it and she doesn't like the ending. So that epic novel was my actual story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So then the third part, what I did was I wrote it as it actually happens with Roy, the real Roy, and then I made it so that it ended happily.
Right.
So.
You journal?
I used to. Not so much anymore.
No?
No. Like, I'll write something down. Like, I might journal, like, in a poem or something.
Right.
And then just write it and keep it. And then.
But not like as a practice.
Not though. Like as a practice. No, okay. I should.
Well, I mean,
people should. It's good to write.
It's really good for, yeah, for your head.
Yeah.
You do the morning pages. You ever try that?
Morning, you know what that pages. Is? Okay. No, like affirmations?
No.
Because I do that.
It's a. I'm going to ask about that. So the morning page is from a book called The Artist's Way.
Oh.
And there's a woman named Karen. I always forget her first name. She wrote it. And it's about allowing yourself to be an artist and incorporating, you know, and giving yourself permission to create things.
Nice.
So one of the things she says to do, and I'm a witness, it works. Every morning you get up. If you need to have coffee, make it. Don't drink it.
Mm-hmm.
300 pages can be about anything. Can write the word Roy.
Okay.
But you gotta write 300 pages. Then go on with your day.
Ah.
You do that 2 or 3 days in a row, and you feel a shift in the way you think, because your day starts out with you producing instead of receiving. Like most people, when you get up, you turn the TV on, you receive. You know,
mm-hmm,
you look in the mirror, you get feedback about what you look at. You're not producing anything.
Right.
And so your brain spends most of its time receiving, which makes producing things harder.
Harder, yeah.
So the trick is...
there's too much noise now.
Right.
Yeah.
So the trick is, it's like working out. The trick is to now orient your body, or orient your brain to getting used to producing first thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then... the whole rest of the day, you're more creative, and it comes easier.
Interesting. I'm going to try that.
It's a cool practice.
If I could get myself moving a little earlier in the morning, yeah, that would be great.
Now, do you work?
I do work.
What do you do?
Yeah. I'm a senior account clerk at Orange County Government.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So everybody asks, it's like so funny because people ask me, you know, like if I meet new people, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, I work for, you know, and that's what I say. And they're like, oh, that's boring.
Does Orange County owe me any money?
I don't think so.
Probably not.
I'm not allowed to investigate anybody. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
But yeah, it's basically a job that you should have to shuffle paper that's on fire.
Okay.
And then, you know, heavy pressure, and you're in a pressure cooker with this paper that's on fire.
Ugh.
And then you go home and you're totally exhausted.
Yeah.
And that's...
and that makes it hard to write.
It makes it hard, yeah.
Yeah, it makes
so
it hard.
So I only write if, like, on a long weekend now. I mean, I'm working on my fourth and final. And it's hard. Like, I write on long holiday weekends. That's it.
Try these morning pages, maybe. Because then you it makes you want to write.
It makes you want to write.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a great idea.
Yeah. And it don't, it's not a journal. It's just 300 pages.
Right.
It can be a journal. It can be the same. It can be anything.
It could be anything. Just, maybe something you want to create for that day.
Maybe.
You know, like you want to
Or some say days whatever. You just got nothing, so you just write the word nothing. I've done that. I've written like half a page, just the word nothing, because I got nothing.
Oh, that's funny.
And then something comes, and then...
Huh.
Yeah. Just, if you... If you had to pick between writing books and playing drums, what would you do?
Oh my God, that's hard. Probably writing books.
You would do the books.
I think so. Because I've actually gotten injured from playing drums too hard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But you've never gotten injured from booking too hard?
Nope.
What do you see the rest of your life as? If you're kind of, you're kind of meh about relationships, right?
Not met. Okay. My heart is very open.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
still,
I'm
good.
Definitely. Yeah, after this last thing, you'd think it would have crushed me, but actually, 2 or 3 weeks after, I feel pretty good, and I feel like I'm open for something new, and
okay.
Not like as a rebounds, because I don't believe in rebounds. That's why
right.
I hermit myself for months and years.
Oh, okay.
You know, but I'm actually ready for something
all
if the
cool.
right person comes along.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Do you believe in friends with benefits?
Maybe.
Okay.
I don't, not really.
No.
Not
I had a
for
feeling
me.
You didn't.
Maybe a temporary kind of thing, but not in long term.
Right. No. I don't think it can work long term.
I don't think it could work long term.
Yeah. I think you'd almost have to put a cap on it.
Yeah. And it's funny, I was involved with someone who had a friends with benefits situation that whenever he wasn't in a relationship, and that's in one of my books, he would just, her and him and her would get together and
right.
just, you know, accommodate each other or whatever.
You are a writer. That was well put. Accommodate
yeah.
each other.
and I really didn't want to meet this woman because he was like, oh, you know, she's a teacher. And so there was like this whole thing. I did not want to meet her. I was like, that's your, you know, your fuck buddy.
Right.
He said I could use.
Oh, you can definitely
okay,
curse.
Cool. And I said, I don't want any part of her. And then one day it.
Wait, while happened. You're in the relationship?
Well, no, he wasn't doing anything while we were
okay.
in a relationship. And when she has a relationship, they don't, you know.
Okay.
It's just when they're both single.
Right.
That they
when the moon's aligned.
But I'm like, I feel uncomfortable with that kind of thing. So
right.
as it turned out, he had a daughter, beautiful daughter, cheerleader. She had a boyfriend. And he would always, like, she was his little princess, you know.
Sure.
So there was this day that we had to go out somewhere. The hottest day of the year. I was on antibiotics for, you know, a UTI. Thank
right.
you to him. And and then I had to go out in this blazing sun at this street fair with following him and his daughter around. And the fuck buddy came along.
Ooh.
And let me tell you something. Thank God she was there. First of all, she was a wonderful woman. And
okay.
I actually loved her almost immediately.
Wow.
Her energy. Like, I feel people's energy.
Right.
And I felt her energy, and I'm like, I really like her. I
oh,
will,
wow.
you know?
Right.
And we were hanging out while he was following his daughter and the boyfriend around. And then all of a sudden, I started getting dizzy because
sure.
it was
in
really
the heat
hot.
In the
she took care of me like you would not believe. And the idiot I was dating was like, oh, sees me sitting on a stair. She's got her arm around me with a bottle of cold water.
Oh, wow.
You know, she's like, oh, my God, she got dizzy. And she almost, he was like, oh, okay. Where'd my daughter go?
Mm.
I lost sight of her for a minute. I was like, that's it.
Mm. Now, okay, the most important question here. Are you sure the UTI came from him?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah.
So, do you know the story of my wife, Trish?
Yeah, you mean about her?
Cancer?
Cancer,
yeah.
Yes, I do.
So,
and she's very brave, and I
oh,
just, wow.
Thanks. Yeah. So, we're sitting down in one of the, we're in the doctor's office one time. And the doctor goes, she goes, how did I, and this was before treatment or anything, which was just still getting her head around it.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, how did I get this? And he's like, well, it's not conclusive, but the theory is papillomavirus, sexually transmitted.
Okay.
She turns to me and goes, you gave me cancer. And I'm right?
God.
And I'm like, well, no. But then we found out like 97% of people have it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so blah, blah. But, so that's why when you said he gave you the UTI, I'm like, well, let's just make sure.
Oh, yeah. No, okay. There was nobody else.
Okay.
And, like, he had this beautiful shower that he designed at his gorgeous log house. There were, like, four different sprays that got you at all different angles.
Okay.
I mean, it would have been nice if he actually used the shower.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And
that would have been nice.
Yeah.
I have a great UTI story.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right. So this is, like, 30 plus years ago. Mm-hmm. I used to race bicycles, not motorbikes, but bicycles.
Okay.
30 years ago, bike seats were not what they are now.
Yeah, I remember those.
So now when you race bikes, the seat has a cut in the middle. And the reason is because if you're a guy and you're racing a bike and it doesn't have a seat in the middle and you're banging up and down on a bike.
Yeah, shock absorption kind of.
No, your urethra kinks.
Oh.
And because it swells up and gets twisted and it kinks. And you wind up getting bladder infection.
Oh, my God.
So I had a doctor at the time, Dr. Common Ellis, and she retired. And, you know, the first time we went, she's like, look, I have to check your prostate. No, she checked my prostate. She said, no, you have a UTI.
Yeah.
You get Bactrim, you get Peridium, you go home, right?
Yep.
So now it starts happening like, and they're no, UTIs are no fun.
They're not.
No, they are no fun.
They are not.
So now like every 6 weeks I'm getting them. So, but I'm calling her and like, this is back when you could call your doctor and they say, I'll put a prescription in.
Right.
So she's like, okay, I'll just put a prescription. So I go to New Jersey. It's a Sunday. I race.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I drive him back over the George Washington Bridge and boom, it hits. Now this is pre cell phone. Like you didn't have, you know, and I didn't have her home number. I would always call her at her office. So, or maybe I had a cell phone, but I didn't have her home number. So I'm like, oh. So I drive past Westchester Medical Center,
okay,
which has an emergency room.
Right.
Westchester Medical Center is right next to Westchester's prison.
It is?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Right next to. So I go in and I'm in like my bike gear, right? Like I got like the skinny pants and the stupid hat and blah, 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 blah. And
the stupid hat, the helmet, you mean, right?
No. Back then, you wore like these flimsy baseball caps.
Get out of here.
Yeah, with like little tiny brims. It looked so dumb.
Oh my God.
So I go in, and they admit me, and I go, look, I have a UTI. I know what it is. I get them all the time from racing bikes. Take a look at these stupid pants.
Yeah, Lycra, right? Probably, yeah.
I need Bactrim and Peridium, and I will go away, and you'll never have to see me again. She says, well, you know, a doctor has to see you.
Right.
I'm like, okay.
Right.
So I go in the, you know, the thing, they pull the curtain, I'm sitting there, I'm dying. Oh. And the doctor comes in, and he closes the curtain, not all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, listen, I need Bactrim and Peridium. It's a bladder infection. I know it. If you could look at my history, you would know that I've been living on Bactrim and Peridium for forever, blah, blah, blah. I'm trying to make jokes. And he's like, well, you're going to have to check your prostate. I'm like,
oh.
So.
And we all know how they do that.
Right. So here's the image. My feet are on the floor. My elbows are on the cot. I'm facing the crack in the curtain that he didn't close all the way. And staring back at me are three inmates in shackles, grinning and laughing at me while this is happening. Yeah.
So you went to the emergency room for the prison?
No, the prison, they happened to be patients as well.
Oh, okay.
So.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And they just go there because it's, you know, right next door. So they don't have to transport them, yeah.
Oh my God.
So as bad as your UTI was.
Oof. Yeah, that's pretty scary. Did they wait for you after you came out of the room?
No.
Hey, you look pretty good in there.
Right? And I'm in like the tightest outfit humanly possible.
Oh,
so,
my
yeah.
God.
What's the next book?
That's funny. Oh, so the next book, I started my memoirs.
Okay.
So that one is Confessions of a Serial Soulmate Searcher.
Okay.
So, and it starts out from when I'm 14.
Right.
And my first innocent, you know, adventures of, you know, whatever. And that's the excerpts that I was telling
please.
You if I'd like to read.
Yeah, please.
All right. I think you guys would like this because I was so totally innocent. Back then.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, you know, you still get the hormones and everything, whatever. So, all right. So
I'm familiar with the hormones.
Yes. So, okay. So, his name was Vince, not his real name, because all the names are, you know, changed. Okay. Vince was a nice fellow, about 18 years old. I was always attracted to older men. Remember, I was 14.
Right.
And he came from a nice Polish family. His entire wardrobe consisted of two identical pair of jeans and two identical white t-shirts. There would always be one pair of jeans hanging on the clothesline to dry while he was wearing the other pair. I was only 14 years old at the time, and my mother would kill me if she knew I was dating, in quotes, this boy. I informed him that my mother would allow me to date when I was 16, but probably only if Janet was married or had a good prospect at the time. Janet was my older sister. Our dating consisted of driving around in his Dodge Dart, and it wasn't a car, it was a tank, hanging out in his basement, listening to music, and necking, aka making out, as teenagers call it these days. I don't know if they still call it these days, but
they
whatever.
Call it talking now.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, okay. That is.
Talking with tongues. Okay. Mm-hmm. So our little love affair lasted about 3 weeks. While dating at this young age, I still had the notion that I can get pregnant just by rubbing against a boy. So all this necking caused me to become very paranoid. The so-called experienced girls in high school always warned that sperm had the ability to swim right through clothes. While I was with him, however, I forgot about this paranoia and guilt and for a little while and just enjoyed the experience. His hobbies were photography and piano. He only knew how to play one complete song, which was Non Dementa Car by Jerry Vale.
Okay.
He played the piano and sang it for me over and over again. The first line of lyrics were, Non Dementa Car means don't forget you are my darling. He didn't want me to ever Dementa Car that I was his darling. He was intensely drilling it into my brain. He also took pictures of me with his Polaroid camera. No, they weren't naked pictures. I wasn't that naughty at this tender age. We did what most teenagers did, everything else but. And I didn't even do most of what was considered everything else yet. I didn't even French kiss with this guy. All we did was smash our lips together until I thought my teeth were going to break. And dry hump. Until one day, the dry humping had a wet ending. I never saw anyone jump up so fast. He raced outside to remove his other jeans from the clothesline and got redressed. Now, getting back to the pictures, which had been taken probably a week after the changing of the jeans, when the two-minute development period was over, the developed pictures produced results that astonished us both. On a couple of the pictures, against my stomach area, was a big streak of arc-shaped orange color, which with what looked like a face at the top.
Okay.
I was convinced that I was pregnant and this was a picture of the fetus. I freaked out and ran all the way home. I freaked out even more when he informed me later in CB language that his father saw the pictures and claimed the face at the end of the orange streak looked just like Vinny's grandmother that had died some years ago. So it seemed that I was pregnant with my boyfriend's dead grandmother.
Beautiful.
I freaked out a little too much about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Vinny was 18 and more informed about how girls actually do get pregnant. He kept wondering why I thought I was pregnant in the first place since he wasn't responsible. So he concluded that I was cheating on him and I was just too traumatized about the whole thing to explain to him the myth of the relentlessly strong swimming sperm. So we broke up. I was so incredibly shaken that I inadvertently let it slip to my mother that I was sneaking out with him. She was pretty upset with me. I didn't mention the pictures, of course, and she grounded/punished me by not letting me see Emily or use the CB for about a month. So fast forward 2 years, and I was actually with a boyfriend. I found somebody, a guitar player in the folk church that I went to. And
never date the guitar player in a church.
Well, that was my first love.
Okay.
And my first real love was this guy, so I... You know, talking about him and everything. So now I turn 16, and now we're going to pick up again back to Vinny for a minute. So I must stray for a brief moment to the day of my 16th birthday before returning to this momentous day when Vito asked me out. That was his name, my first love. Not his real name. Okay. So it is quite noteworthy to mention that on the morning I became 16, I was busy getting ready for school when suddenly I heard music playing outside my living room window. It was Vinny. He was waiting outside for me with the song You're Mine, Angel Baby by Toby Bo playing on his boombox radio. He still didn't Dementa Car about me at this point, 2 years later, but I sure had Dementa Car'd about him, and I was surprised that he was still thinking of me, especially after our freaky breakup. I went outside, politely greeted him, and he responded in kind. He wished me a happy birthday. I was surprised that he had remembered. Then the realization dawned on me that I had told him that it would be okay for us to date when I was 16. I thanked him for the birthday wishes, and he pathetically asked, "So do you think we can go out to dinner sometime?" I broke the news to him that I already had a boyfriend. He was absolutely crushed. I couldn't believe the look on his face. He sputtered, "I thought you couldn't start dating until you were 16. I explained that this boy, man really, was from my church, and my mother had made an exception for him. I watched him walk dejectedly away. He was wearing those same jeans. Angel Baby was still blasting from the radio, getting softer the further away he got. He returns later that night, drunk as a skunk who fell into a pool of Jack Daniels. I was at a folk group rehearsal, so I didn't get to witness his charade. My mother told me that he was screaming up at our windows, calling my name. She went to the window and informed him I wasn't home. He was making such a racket that all my neighbors began looking out their windows. He yelled up at my mother, "Is she pregnant? Is she pregnant? I'll bet she's pregnant." Did he honestly believe I was pregnant for 2 years? What was I, an elephant? My mother just shut the window, embarrassed that the neighbors were still watching. She later angrily grilled me, asking as to what that was all about. I had to spill the beans to her about the pictures and my paranoia. She was angry with me all over again about my sneaking out with this guy, but she couldn't ground me this time because it was 2 years later from when she first grounded me for the same reason of going out with him. Also, it was my 16th birthday, and I was getting too old to ground at this point anyway. So,
fantastic. What was the orange stuff?
It was just, you know, like the Polaroids when you peel just, off that black.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it just, the streak just of made orange, and it had a face. That's and hilarious. Of course, the face looked like his dead grandmother.
That's hilarious.
Oh, my God.
I'm pregnant with your dead grandmother.
With the sperm that swam through the jeans.
Right. All right. So that's the first memoir. Then
yes.
There's a second one.
Then there's a second one called Dirty Laundry, the Lukewarm Cycle. And Lukewarm is a person. That was his name. I named him Luke Warren. But yeah, so his name was Luke, and he was a twin, and
also never date a twin.
Yeah, well, the other twin was the better, the nicer one.
Oh,
it's as it turned out. But the funny thing is,
you dated the bad twin.
I dated the bad twin.
Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately. But the funny thing is, Confessions of a Serial Soulmate Searcher is about a bunch of different people. This book is all about one person. And it is, if you can see my books, it is the largest
it is
book.
Luke.
It's this one. It's
well done, Luke.
Luke, I am not your girlfriend Luke. anymore.
Luke, you're the biggest something.
So, yeah, so that's that one.
What's story worthy about Luke?
Oh, what's not story worthy about Luke? Oh, my God. He was the flakiest person I've ever known. Guitar
okay.
player, of course. I don't say of
guitar
course.
Guitar players are taking a
I don't
beating today.
I mean, of course, meaning that it's the guitar players. It's the guitar's fault. I don't know what it is. And guitar players are great. I love guitar players. I
Thank
love
you.
Drummers. I love bass players. I love everybody. But for some reason, this particular person was extremely flaky. He was still recuperating from his ex-girlfriend, which was another bad sign for me. And he owned this big house with his brother. And before I knew it, and he was also super jealous. But he wouldn't get jealous like the last person got jealous. Like angry, scary, jealous kind of thing. He was just like a woman who would get jealous. Like, oh, okay. Purse his lips. Oh, yeah. Oh, you're going to do that, huh? Oh. So I felt like I was in a relationship with another woman.
Okay,
it was like the
right.
weirdest thing. I was like, oh my God, this guy. And he was very like feminine. And there's nothing wrong with that either. But, you know, if you say you're a heterosexual, be a heterosexual.
Uh-oh.
Kind of thing. But it was like he was always like nagging me. It was like he was like an actual woman.
Mm.
But not only that. That's why this book is so thick. It's hard to even pinpoint.
Was he gay?
He was not gay.
Okay.
Apparently. But there was a lot of, like, weird things. He would always show up late, like 2 hours late.
That's weird.
I mean, really, like, weird late stuff.
Right.
And he would just, like, get lost sometimes. Just, let's just drive around and get lost. And then I, you know, whatever.
Right.
So that was, like, a weird thing. He would give large parties, and guess who had to do all the cooking for the parties?
Nice.
Yeah, so there was that. And just, he would get mad at me if I spoke to somebody. Like, I was like, what, maybe 30s, late 30s at the time? I spoke to this guy that was like 60 years old, which is like my age now.
Right.
And he got mad at me. Mm. I said, let me pick the safest person in here, the room to right. talk to. And right. he had a problem with that. So we were constantly, you know.
Are you sure he wasn't gay?
I guess I can't be sure, but I think he's not.
Okay.
Because he was always like with women. There was always. Oh, okay. Like a, well, you know.
We have a friend who is married to a guy who's so clearly gay.
Okay.
It's ridiculous. And she's the only person in our entire circle who doesn't know it.
Really?
And it's amazing.
Wow.
And I guarantee you, if I went and asked him privately, are you gay? He'd be like, fuck yes. But.
That is so funny.
And she's the only one who doesn't see it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I always say, whatever you are, be who you want to be.
Right.
Because there is no point in, what do you call it, suffocating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be who you are.
Right.
And like, and I know I've done that. Like, over the last few years, I've kind of suffocated my personality to make people happy.
That never works.
I can't do that anymore. So, you know, I just got to be who I was. Not so much. Like how I was back in my 20s,
right.
which was I was my full vibrant self. After my divorce, I was like who I wanted to be. And that was great. As wild as I wanted to be, the whole thing. I mean, yeah, I got to rein that in a little bit. But I think that same. Well, I don't know. I think I could rein it in physically on the outside, like with all appearances. But inside my heart. I'm still that same passionate. Well, I'll just unleash it on one lucky person.
Okay. Well, let's make the ad right now.
No, it's okay.
I always wanted to date a woman who could unleash. It doesn't matter what. Okay. It could be a dog. I just want you to be able to unleash something.
Yeah. It's just, if you grow up and you get more...
You have to promise me.
Compose what?
If you go on an online dating site, you know how you got to make up a nickname? Yours is Unleash.
Unleash? Okay? That's good. Okay.
Thank you.
I did go on one early last year. Very early last year, like in January.
Right.
People were saying, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. So I did, and it was horrible. It was horrible. I can't do that. You know, people, they're like, don't get tied to one person. So what did I do? I get tied to one person.
Right.
I'm not a multi-person dater.
Right.
So.
What about trying that, though?
I have tried it.
Oh, and it doesn't work for you?
It doesn't. And I even tried it beginning of this year, too. And I met somebody through.
Right.
And it was just like, after a while, like after a week or 2 weeks, I mean, he seemed very nice. Spent the holidays together.
Nice?
Yeah, which was nice. And then all of a sudden, like, the stories didn't add up.
Uh-oh.
And he's telling me weird stuff. And he goes, I told you this. And I'm like, no, you didn't.
Uh-oh.
And then the more I knew, the more things didn't add up. So I was like,
did you meet the missus?
No. No, there wasn't a missus.
Oh, okay.
But he was still, you know, because he said he was committed to me and we were going to move forward.
Oh, but he.
But I don't think he was.
Got it.
I think there was other people.
Okay. Because
things just didn't add up. So I was like, well. Gotta let you go. Now my boundaries.
Another one back in.
But you know what's funny? At least now I don't wait. Like what I was doing right. was wait like a long time
right.
before I break up because I would put up and put up and put up.
Right.
Now you know. You're going to wear sweatpants to Christmas dinner? You're out.
Yes.
You're
agreed.
Out.
You agreed. All right. So we got through.
So we got that. And then,
what's the last one?
The last one here is called Chores, Boars, and Whores.
Okay.
And it's the thinnest book out of all of them. Which was basically...
Just my look that the book about whores is the thing.
And it was just, there's a couple of nice guys mixed in here. Those were probably the boars, I guess, if I had to sum them
okay.
up. Or they were just like not part of the category, but they just happened to be there during that time period.
Okay.
So
this is the second memoir.
This is the third memoir.
Third memoir, right.
Because Dirty
right,
Laundry
right.
is the second, so sorry. This is the third. And my fourth one is called Menopausal Mating. And I'm working on that right now.
The mating part or the book?
The menopausal.
Oh, okay.
So that starts with the third marriage.
Okay.
And how that took place and all that. So
great menopause story. So
you have a great menopause
I
story?
I do. Great,
okay, tell
great
me.
Menopause story. So I pretty open in here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and Trish doesn't listen to every show. You can't. I mean,
okay.
You know, it's a lot.
Don't upset Trish. I like her.
Oh, well, here we go. So we're driving, and she puts on one of the shows, and I'm like, any show but that show. And I, because I know where it's going.
Oh.
And Trish is perimenopausal.
Mm-hmm.
And forget who I was talking with, but we were talking about menopause. And she's, and you know, I hear Trish listening to me talk about menopause. I think the woman was talking about that she was going through and heat flashes. We're talking heat flashes, and I'm like,
oh yeah.
I'm like, oh my god, Trish gets heat flashes all the time because she's perimenopausal. Trish pulls and goes, what the fuck?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was not good.
But of all the things you have to listen to, that's the show you got to pick.
That's one. So funny.
Oh god.
Oh my god.
Now, where do we get your books?
Oh, they're available on Amazon.
Okay.
And also Barnes & Nobles. And, like, Amazon has this thing where it just goes, like, everywhere.
Right.
And I think they're on Goodreads as well.
Okay.
But Amazon is the best place to get them.
Which book, if I'm starting to read you, which book do I start with?
Probably, well, it depends on what you like. If you like thrillers or, you know.
But if I want to get, like, a sense of you as a writer, which one? A
sense of me as a writer?
Yeah.
Probably Lament Troy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool.
Yeah. If you want to laugh your head off, Advice from a Sicilian Rebel.
Okay.
If you want, you know, something that's along the lines of an M. Night Shyamalan movie, that would be Criminal Spirit.
Okay.
And then memoirs, you know, I'm gearing the memoirs specifically at single people. Because
right.
I really want them to read this so that they don't make the same mistakes I did.
Right.
Because these are literal guidebooks for what not to do.
And the name of the band is?
And the name of the band is, we don't have a name yet.
Okay.
This is Brandy New. My new bandmate was from an audition that I went to back in February. Sharon, actually, we kind of hooked up.
Very cool.
You know, hooked that up. And I should probably tell you about the audition because it's a story in itself.
Go ahead.
I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I won't use names. So the band leader called me and, you know, gave me the address, I GPS'd it, whatever, and I went there. So, and now my car talks to me with the texts, so
right.
I hear, you know, and I played it, and basically what it said was, when you get here, go around down the house, behind the house, and knock on the door, in case my wife's not at the top, to answer the door. So now, in my crazy mind that I was nervous, and you know how you get when you're going to an audition, you're right. A little nervous, plus it's dark out. It's the middle of winter. It was, you know, the snow was still partially there. It was just starting to melt, just so you get the idea of the ground. So I get there, and there's this long driveway, and there's cars parked next to each other. So I park, and I'm like, but he told me I should park down behind the house. And I'm looking to where behind the house is, and there's this big empty spot. So in my delirium, I thought that was a parking lot down there, and he wanted me down there because the upper parking lot might have been for a different purpose. So I drive down there, and there's a hill. There's an actual hill, and I go down the hill, and as I'm telling the story, I just wish I had stayed at the top of the hill where I belonged.
Right.
I go down the hill. I don't know where I am. It's pitch black. I see the side of the house. There's this little patio with the, you know, little table and chairs on it. I said, oh, I'm not in the right place. Let me go back up to the road. So I drive up. I make it halfway up, and the car starts to slide. So now I'm like, oh, my God, I'm in trouble. So I quit, like, very carefully back down so as not to make tracks. Back down. I text the band leader, and I said, I'm so sorry. I'm stuck outside, and I got a problem. So he comes out. And there was no nice to meet you kind of thing. It was like, oh, my God, we got to get the car back up the hill. Right. So he says, let me try. So I'm like, OK. So he gets in the car and he's going up and down. He's trying different ways. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, now there's so many tracks in the lawn. So he says, well, you know, there's two other guys there right now. So let me get them out and we'll push you up the hill. So they're trying to push me up the hill. And then I start feeling like I'm going to slide back, and I immediately hit the brakes because
right.
the last thing I'm going to do is kill three men.
Right.
You know, that would make things much worse. So they
would ruin the audition.
That would ruin the audition. So they're like, why are you stopping, just keep going. I said, no, I'm not going to kill you guys. So there was that whole argument. So finally I said, look, I just got to call AAA and I got to get them to come and winch me out. There's no other way. So we said, all right, one. So we go inside and I'm sitting there on the phone with AAA on speaker. Now, I don't know the name of the town. I don't remember the guy's address because I GPSed it. I just plugged it in. So they're asking me, okay, where are you? What's the name of the town? So then I look to the band leader and he says, Walden, let's just say. And I said, Walden. So then they said, what's the address? So he gives me the address. 1313 Mockingbird Lane. Okay, 1313 Mockingbird Lane, I say to the AAA. So like he's feeding me the answers and I'm repeating them. And then they said, okay, where are you stuck? And I said, in his backyard. And then the bass player calls out, on the grassy knoll. So I said, on the grassy knoll.
That's awesome.
Like an idiot.
Right.
I just repeated it. So everybody's cracking up. So while we were waiting for AAA to come, oh, the best was, they said, what kind of car do you have? So I told them. They said, what's the color? So I said, plum. And they said, what? I said, plum. I don't get that. I said, P as in Peter, L as in Lucy, U as in under, M as in Mary, plum. And she said, tan? No, and
right.
I said, no. I said, it's dark. You're not going to see the color of the
tan.
Car.
Let's go with so, tan.
It's like, whatever. It's tan. So I actually played a few songs while we were waiting for AAA.
Okay, good.
And the keyboard player hadn't come yet, but he arrived just as the same time as the AAA truck came. It was winching out my car. So the band leader introduced me to him, and I said, hi, I'm Lucia, not your drummer. This one, I was like, there's no way I'm getting this gig. So they winched me out to the road, you know, whatever. I went back down, finished playing, but I was like, for sure, there's no way these guys are going to call me back. No way. So when I left, and I'm making jokes through the whole thing.
Right.
You know, like the songs like I Won't Back Down, Tom Petty. I said, but I did back down. I went up, I backed down.
I won't come back up, but I will back down.
Right. So like the jokes, I was just like, you know, because that's what I do when I'm nervous. I make jokes.
Right.
And so when I left, of course, they were all still there. They're, you know. So I was like, okay, you know, I know you're going to be talking about me. It was nice meeting all of you guys. And, you know, and one guy pulled me aside and just like grabbed me by the hand just as I was racing out the door. And the kindness of all of these people surprised me, but especially his kindness. And he just like looked at me like I was a human being and not an idiot. And he said, it was very nice to meet you, Lucia. And it was nice playing with you. So I said, nice playing with you, too. And I was like, wow, you know, everybody was so nice. I thought I was never going to hear from them again. But he actually asked me to come back. The band leader asked me to come back a week later. It was only me, him, and the bass player, though, because the other two people couldn't make it. And it was okay. We didn't have anything down and like a lot of stuff. I'll call him the kind guy.
Right.
He sang, you know, so, and he wasn't there. So it was kind of hard. The bass player was trying to, you know, so it was kind of a mishmash. But I was in the band. This was great. So then something happened. I think the kind guy went on vacation. And then I got injured when he came back because I was playing drums too hard. I was rehearsing with this other guy that I do gigs with. And I had this injury, which was called repetitive stress injury.
Right.
Repetitive strain injury from my bass drum foot.
Okay.
And I basically collapsed on stage when I was playing with this other guy. And I ripped my boot off. I was wearing knee-length boots. I ripped it off. My big toe was sticking straight up in the air.
Ooh.
I had like this jolt of what I can call lightning that went right up to my hip.
Right.
And it was like a Charlie horse kind of feeling. But for 20 minutes, and it didn't go away. So my bandmate was like, you've got gout. You've got gout. When the toe sticks up like that, it's gout. I'm like, it's not gout.
Oof.
So it was just a nightmare. So I was injured. My doctor said, you know, what it was, my chiropractor. And so because of that, I couldn't rehearse for 2-3 weeks.
Right.
And then after that, the band leader got a strain. He got an injury in his neck, so he couldn't play guitar.
Right.
And then I think somebody else went on vacation. I don't know what happened, but I never went back.
Mm.
Then I end up with this guy who was jealous of the band leader because the band leader texted me while I was on vacation and said, I haven't forgotten about you. meaning
like,
about rehearsal.
Right.
Not, I forgot about you. What's with this guy? You know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no. He doesn't mean that.
Right.
That was the hypothetical situation that we thought about. Was that.
That's misery.
That this poor man who is the one of the nicest men in the world, religious, wife, children, was never anything.
Right.
Would have happened or intention of on his part.
Right.
And that's what the thing was. And that's why I quit the bands. And then I said, this is ridiculous. And then I went back. No. So anyway, but the person that I'm meeting after the podcast to rehearse with that I told you about is the Kinds guy.
Oh, there
so
we go.
Start up a new thing.
Wonderful.
You know, so I'm very excited about that.
You're a fantastic storyteller, Lucia. And,
thank you.
We will get books. We will buy books on Amazon. We can get them Barnes & Noble. There's a bunch of different genres.
Okay.
And you'll come back when the next one's written?
I'd love to, sure.
Okay, beautiful. Sure.
Okay.
Thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
My pleasure, man.
Great. Right.
I'm John. This was Home From Here. We're good.
Awesome.
Oh,
thank my you. God. That was fun. Thank
oh,
you.
Oh, was it good?
Yeah.
Good.
It was fun.
Oh, let me just go unplug quick. Hold on first. Hold on one sec. Oh, I'm glad to have fun.
Yellow, Jack here. Yellow Jackets, form up. Target ahead. Over.
Roger that, Jack. Over.
Prepare to engage the Jones House.
Wait, what's that ahead? It looks like...
Waverly!
No! Baldy, help us!
Baldface here. Coming in hot, fellas. This guy's putting up a tough fight.
He's on my stinger! I can't shake him! I gotta eject!
Abort!
If your house is starting to look like a scene from Top Gun, then you should probably give me a call. Hi, this is Mike Robinson from Waverly Pest Control. I'll come out and see what kind of bug problem you really have and tell you how to solve it. Because when you hire Waverly, you really get Waverly, and you can wave goodbye to pests. Call me at 297-6700. That's 297-6700. Remember to check us out online and like us on Facebook. Waverly Pest Control. Wave goodbye to pests.
Waverly Pest Control. When you want to wave goodbye.